You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, we've got this budget deal. And I got to say, first of all, Heritage Action and all these right-wing groups came out and said, this is a bad deal. And we are going to punish you, Republicans, if you vote for it. So now John Boehner is pushing back personally at Heritage Action and these other groups. In fact, the article, I don't have a source on this, so I'll paraphrase it. Basically, a reporter asked him what he thought about the opposition to this from Club for Growth and Heritage Action and Americans for Prosperity. And Boehner said, quote, "You mean the groups that came out and opposed it before they ever saw it? They're using our members." By that, he means the Republican members of the House of Representatives. "They're using our members and they're using the American people for their own goals. This is ridiculous." See, what Boehner knows is that these conservative groups are going to send out huge fundraising, you know, mails to everybody in sight saying, yeah, this thing is terrible and you need to send us $25 a week. You can help us fight the good fight. Fight the bad deal, whatever. Well, it is a bad deal. And that's, you know, where it gets really interesting is that it's a bad deal in large part because basically it's screwing all of us. I mean, this deal does nothing to raise revenue. I mean, you know, okay, $5 tax on your airplane tickets. That's not exactly a tax increase on the rich. I mean, it does nothing about these giant loopholes. It does nothing about the fact that people like Mitt Romney get to pay, you know, capital gains. It gets nothing, maximum 20% income tax. Whereas, you know, two people working at a, you know, good, decent union job. I mean, a couple of government workers, two teachers who are married are probably paying 25, 30% income tax. More than Mitt Romney pays. Does nothing about that. It does nothing about the fact that the banksters on Wall Street who are literally earning $1 billion a year individually are paying a variation on the capital gains tax called carried interest. This is a nice little loophole that they got buried into our laws sometime back. Does nothing about that. Does nothing about the oil depletion allowance. Does nothing about the huge tax subsidies for agribusiness, for big business. It does nothing about the billions of dollars that are being offered to companies all over America. They'll just move from state to state. It does nothing about any of this stuff. It does not extend unemployment insurance. It does not undo the sequester damage to Meals on Wheels and those kinds of programs. It keeps it in place. It undoes some of the damage to the Defense Department, so the defense contractors are going to make out okay. I mean, this is basically the sales pitch for this that Paul Ryan and Patty Murray are putting forward, which is true, is that the sequester was this giant club that just chopped, you know, this giant meat axe that just basically chopped the top off everything. And they're right. But we're trading in meat axe austerity for surgical austerity. It's still austerity. No country has ever cut its way to prosperity. Now, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are going to push for this because basically this is all they're going to get with the Republicans controlling the House of Representatives. I understand the political realities of this. And I am not suggesting that were I a member of Congress, I would necessarily vote against this. In fact, you know, I got an email from Bernie this morning. Not me. I mean, we all, you know, anybody who's on his mailing list, right? I'm pretty sure. At least it was a press release that went out to all the press that basically said, you know, Bernie's on the committee. that put this thing together, that said that, you know, it was his efforts, that he was successful in keeping them from going after Social Security and Medicare. Well, you know, thank God for small favors. And I'm sure we'll hear Bernie's opinion about that and thoughts on that on Friday, probably at some length. He was rather reluctant to talk about it last weekend because, or last Friday, because the negotiations were still ongoing. And you don't just, like, go blurting this stuff out on the air. But the net of this is, A, yeah, okay, you know, Nancy Pelosi wants it to pass. John Boehner wants it to pass. I want it to pass simply because it's less of a disaster than if it doesn't pass, which will be a genuine disaster because then the sequester cuts kick in with the meat axe. But our choices should not be between less of a disaster and a horrible disaster. I mean, our choices should include something like, you know, okay. I mean, I'd like our choices to include something that's actually good. Hey, let's just, you know, do away with capital gains and make all income ordinary income. And with all of that and let's take the cap off Social Security. With all that revenue, you can strengthen Social Security. You could lower the retirement age. You could strengthen the social safety net. Let's talk about some programs that actually end poverty rather than just talk about poverty. But no, we're in this perpetual austerity mode. I mean, you've got 25 Republican governors who are refusing right now to let the people of their state get back their federal tax dollars in the form of Medicaid. Texas paid billions of dollars in federal Texans paid billions of dollars in federal income tax dollars to the U.S. government and Texas companies. And you would think, and the same with Floridians and Michiganders, I mean, you know, go through the list, and you would think that the people in those states, you know, the old Republican meme used to be, hey, it's your money. You should be able to get your money back from the government or keep it. You know, the or keep it part is no tax in the first place. Well, the tax is already being collected. So how about, hey, it's your money, you get your money back? No, not so much. Rick Perry says, no, we don't want our money back. Texans don't want their money back in the form of Medicaid. If we have to get our money back in the form of Medicaid, keep it. He says to Washington, D.C. He says to Obama. I mean, this is all about trying to tear down the Obama presidency. It's got nothing to do with anything, you know, that has to do with reality or healthcare policy. And in the process, by the way, Rick Perry down in Texas and Rick Snyder in Michigan and Rick Scott and boy, too many Ricks, right? And Rick Scott down in Florida and 22 others are not only saying to their own taxpayers in their own states, no, you can't have your tax dollars back, but they're saying to people in their states who earn between about 70 or 80% of the poverty line and 138% of the poverty line. In other words, people who are right on the edge, you know, people making $15,000, $20,000 a year. Sorry, you make too much to qualify for Medicaid because we're not expanding it. But you don't make enough to be able to afford a plan under Obamacare, you know, because it doesn't cover you because it was intended to cover you with Medicaid. But the John Roberts in the Supreme Court pulled that cork out. And so now people like Rick Perry can screw with Obamacare via Medicaid. I mean, this is nuts, but anyhow, back to the budget bill. The budget bill is just an extension of this. This whole budget deal is just more of, you know, it's more austerity. I mean, like I said, it's better than something that's not as bad. But really, is that's our political choices?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, yeah, as long as the Republicans are in charge of the House of Representatives, those are your political choices, which means 11 months from now, there's an election coming. Get active! Andrew Campbell on the line, senior producer of The Big Picture. Hey, Andrew, how you doing?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So we're going to start out with Calvin Sloan.
Yeah, Calvin Sloan is the legislative representative from People for the American Way. And along with the Center for Media and Democracy, they have released a new report detailing ALEC, the corporate lobbying juggernaut, and their involvement with trying to prolong apartheid in South Africa. Basically what the report details is how ALEC, while most people were urging businesses that operated people, while most people were urging people to not invest in businesses that operated in South Africa during the 1980s, ALEC, along with the Reagan administration, was pushing for more investment.
Right.
So we're going to get into that and really find out what role ALEC played and how their experience in the 1980s is playing in with their efforts across the country today.
Pretty amazing. And then from there, we go to our Lone Liberal Rumble with Cameron Seward and Andrew Kloster.
Yep, they're both from the Heritage Foundation, and they're both good guests, and they always have good takes, so it should be interesting. We'll start off by talking about ALEC and really pointing out similarities between ALEC and fascism, which I know you have a very strong take on. Then we're also going to be talking about the auto bailout, and really a new report is out saying that in 2010 alone, the government stepping in to help GM saved 1.9 million jobs, and in 2009, another 2.6 million jobs were saved. So really, I mean, this seems, while conservatives knocked it at the time, it seems to have been a success. And really, isn't this the role of government when capitalism fails to step in and help the workers and the economy? So we'll get into that, too.
Yeah, you would think. Okay.
We'll also be talking about the Newtown anniversary. It's coming up just days from now. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into, I mean, in the year that's passed since the tragedy, now only one gun law has been passed in Congress. And it had something to do with 3D printing of firearms and did nothing to curb gun violence in this country.
Yeah, and it really wasn't even a new gun law because it was really just the reauthorization.
Yeah, it's a 25-year-old law that's been, I mean, it really was not a win for any gun reform activists. So we'll get into why nothing's passing and talk about how the NRA is the perfect example of corporate interest intertwining with political interests.
Which is the definition of fascism.
Exactly.
There you go. Okay.
And then we'll finish up by talking about Fox News. Two of their anchors recently said that the death of free enterprise is among us because a bakery is not being allowed to openly discriminate against homosexual customers. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about if they really think that, then they kind of have to disagree with the Civil Rights Act, don't they?
Well, except that the Civil Rights Act didn't specify gay people, but yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Ben Cohen and Jackie Simon are going to be with us.
Yeah, we're going to have Ben on from the Daily Banter, and Jackie Simon is the Public Policy Director with the American Federation of Government Employees. And we'll have them on to talk about the budget deal that was announced yesterday by Congressman Paul Ryan and Senator Patty Murray, and we'll get their takes on is it enough, is it too little, what's missing, what's in it that shouldn't be, and really break down the deal.
Yeah, yeah, this program that... It avoids one crisis, but not another, says the Center for American Progress.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Andrew Campbell. Thank you, Andrew.
Oh.
Good to see you. We'll be back 20 minutes past the hour. Does not address the debt limit, which we're going to hit after the first of the year, probably in February or March. It doesn't deal with the 1.3 million people who, at the end of this year, just a couple days after Christmas, are going to lose their unemployment benefits, which could cost the economy as many as 240,000 jobs, just because those people spend those unemployment benefits, which keeps the economy going. You know, which proves once again, economies percolate up, they don't trickle down. Economies are driven by demand, not by supply. They still have to decide what they're going to do about the farm bill and how much they're going to cut out of food stamps. Democrats are saying $4 billion, Republicans are saying $40 billion. Why cut food stamps at all? People are hungry. It's like this is the insanity that, you know, this is what happens. And, you know, I was thinking about this last night. And the the truth that has not been said, and frankly, I have not said it as bluntly as I'm about to say it, but the truth that has not been said up to this point about why anybody would want this kind of thing to go down. Why do you have three basically Koch brothers funded think tanks saying we're opposed to this? And not all of them, just the Koch brothers. I mean, there's a bunch of billionaires involved here. Why are the billionaires so opposed to government, in quotes? Why is it that they're willing to take a meat axe to government in a way that actually is going to cause suicides? It's going to cause spousal abuse. It's going to cause child abuse. It's going to cause homicides. It's going to cause people's lives to be destroyed. Why would these billionaires be willing to do this? And there's a very simple answer. This is what you have to go through to get to destroying the Environmental Protection Agency. This is what you have to get to go through in order to get to destroying programs that protect workers in the workplace. This is what you have to get through in order to get to the process of destroying all protection for labor. These guys want to be able to pollute as much as they used to back in the 50s. They want to be, you know, the Lake Erie caught on fire. The Cuyahoga River caught on fire. I mean, maybe Lake Erie didn't catch on fire. It was dead. That was what it was. It was dead. There was not, you know, it was a dead lake. So much pollution. The Cuyahoga River caught on fire. They want to go back to those days. But because those days were really profitable for them. Now, yes, corporate profits right now are higher than they have ever been in the history of the world, including the Roman Empire. But that's not enough for them. You got to understand, we're talking about cokeheads. We're talking about people who are afflicted by obsessive compulsive disorder, and it is driving their behavior. And it's not just, or you know, garden variety OCD. It's OCD connected with some serious personality disorder, probably sociopathy, so that they don't care what happens to the unemployed people. They don't care what happens to their children, the children of the unemployed people. They don't care what happens to the kids who aren't going to have food stamps or aren't going to have a Christmas or whatever. They just don't give a damn. We've had people like this with us always, and they tend to end up really rich, some of them. You know, these high-functioning sociopaths. And if they can tear down government, if they can make government smaller, it means that their businesses can be more profitable because they will be less regulated. Remember, it's all about regulation. And so they keep saying, make government smaller. And everybody's going, we'll figure out how, you know. And eventually all of the fat is going to be gone, as it were. I mean, that's how they view all this human services stuff, is fat. Eventually all that stuff is going to be blown away. And then it's time to get to the meat. Okay, now let's defund the Environmental Protection Agency, so that Koch Industries or Georgia-Pacific or, you know, fill in the blank, right? Any of these big companies can just go back to polluting however they damn well please and make a whole lot more money. Or so that they don't have to worry about in the future the EPA is going to come along and say, hey, carbon dioxide, it's a pollutant. I mean, they've already said it, right? And therefore, we're going to regulate it. When you hear conservatives talk about government regulation, this is what they're talking about. They are talking about, they don't know. I mean, last night on TV, I asked Chris Ullman, I said, what government regulation? She says, yeah, there's no jobs because of too much government regulation. And I'm like, okay, what government regulation would you do away with? Oh, I'd do away with Obamacare. Well, that's not a government regulation, and that hasn't existed for the last 32 years. That's not what's causing the middle class to fall apart. What government regulation you want to get rid of? I don't know. Well, I'll tell you. The people who are paying the bills? The Koch brothers and their buddies, the government regulations that they want to get rid of are how much pollution can Georgia Pacific's paper plants dump into the rivers? How much sulfur and smelly stuff can they blow into the air? You ever been downwind of a paper plant? I was a few weeks ago. Wow. How much can their refineries dump in, poison can their refineries put in the air? How little can they pay their workers? How rough can the workplace be? And if they get harmed, you know, if workers get harmed in the workplace, how can we do away with their ability to fight back? What about consumers? Why should consumers have any damn rights? Right, this is the real fight. And what you're looking at right now is the nibbling around the edges. Because where Paul Ryan ultimately wants to go is the billionaires run the world. Period.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
None of this fussy liberal or democratic stuff about, oh, the people. You know, let's protect the people from the pollution or the poison or from poverty. No. No. Speaking the truth to multinational corporations would really rather you to know all about. And I can tell you, of all of the Republicans and even some of the Democrats, would probably rather you didn't know all about. Now, here's why this budget deal is better than one that's not as good. One of Herr Mueller's favorite sayings of mine is that under the sequestration, which is what we're operating under right now, because Congress didn't put together a budget, next year, government spending would have been capped at $967 billion, which is starting to get close to the point where it's going to start to digest things like the EPA, which is why the Koch brothers are like, yeah, don't even go for this deal. And instead, Patty Murray and Paul Ryan said, oh, we'll spend a little over $1 trillion, $1.012 trillion, and $1.014 in 2015. Whoa. Where are they going to get that money? Well, first of all, they're not going to do anything to give money to refund, as in to fund once again the program that fed 57,000 children. Those 57,000 kids, tough luck kids. No more Head Start for you. No more breakfast or whatever it may be. No, sorry. 57,000 kids on Head Start. Bupkis. Meals on Wheels. Elderly people, people disabled, people, you know, so sick from things like cancer and AIDS that they can't get up and make food. Meals on Wheels. Sorry. We already cut it. We're not putting it back. Section 8 housing voucher assistance. People being thrown out of their houses. Tough. Homelessness assistance. Forget it. Scientific projects, we don't need those. Now, it does raise some money. It raises $12.6 billion by a $5 tax on air tickets. Gee, that's a real sacrifice for all of us Americans, right? It raises $6 billion by paying less to student loan collectors. I'm not quite sure how I feel about that one. I mean, if it's less money going to actual people who actually have a job as a student loan collector, as much as I hate the fact that we have to have student loan collectors, what are we cutting? It's like everybody likes it when the tax guy gets his pay cut. I mean, is that the deal? $3 billion in savings from not completely refilling the strategic petroleum reserves, which I'm sure is making the oil industry very happy. So, anyway, this is not even the topic I wanted to talk about when I started the show. I wanted to talk to you about how we remember things and how taking pictures is wiping out memories. I thought this was a fascinating topic. But let me see what I've got here for the day. Hour two, Mark Harold is going to be here, and we're going to talk about police and guns. And hour three, Tim Carpenter is going to be here. Well, I can fill this in. I'll get into this picture stuff and things like that after Mark drops by, I think, because I see that we've got a lot of people who want to get in here and offer their thoughts on this budget. and unemployment. Now, there's talk that they're going to extend unemployment benefits, but you got Rand Paul out there saying, no, you don't want to do that because people will get lazy. I had on my program, on my TV program yesterday, the day before, I had some guy say, the Social Security safety net has become a hammock. Yeah, right. Steve in Bombay, New York. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I watch your show every day, and I've learned a lot from you.
Thank you.
I think I know kind of how you think. So anyway, you've taught me a lot, and I want to say how much I appreciate that. But I'm thinking in the trying to think in the big picture, and as far as I see it, as long as the South, which seems to be trying to get back at the rest of the country for the Civil War, keeps going the way it is, our country's going to be a big mess for the foreseeable future. And, you know, there's no shame in losing policy fights. The only shame is in not fighting. And every time I hear the Republicans talk about how they need jobs, I don't see anything coming from President Obama about jobs. And
Wait a minute, Steve. Sorry. President Obama proposed the American Jobs Act, which was a really serious effort to put people back to work, and it got filibustered in the Senate by the Republicans.
A government job. You know, it's not like we don't have infrastructure that we could.
He didn't hear me say that? He just kept on talking? Steve, thanks for the call. Paul in Lucerne, California. Hey, Paul. What's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, I think the reason why they want to shrink government is because government's a great equalizer. It makes possible.
Yeah. But see, I think it goes beyond that. This is now not just rich people. This is businesses that are pushing for this stuff.
Right. And the reason why they want to take away all your safety nets is because you're desperate and you'll have a job.
Right. Right. And they want desperate Americans. They want Americans to be desperate. I mean, this is Russell Kirk in 1951 predicted if the American middle class got too big, people would start asking for things. And sure enough, in the 60s and 70s, you had, you know, women asking for equal rights. You had gays asking for equal rights. You had African-Americans actually getting legislation passed. And then in the early 70s, when the cities were in flames, it's not happening fast enough. And or at least that was the narrative of the times. And that's why in 1971, and then you had, you know, Ralph Nader and Rachel Carlson, you know, with Unsafe at Any Speed and Silent Spring, respectively, talking of, you know, basically taking on the corporate interests. And the conservatives said, oh, this is terrible. This, you know, America's falling apart. We've got to do something about this. We can't have a middle class this strong, this healthy, this big, this diverse. Can't be, you know, because look at what a mess it's causing. And so let's get rid of the middle class. And that's what they've been doing. Paul, thank you for the call. Well said. Gary in Minneapolis, listening on AM 950. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Tom. I you told me to call you. I'm a first-time caller. You signed my book I bought in Minneapolis.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah, I got done reading it. My mother's 90 years old. She's reading it now, and she says, I'll be gone when this all happens. And she grew up in the last Depression. My father used to tell me under Hoover, they would say, if you just griped at all the job, just say, there's 100 people outside want your job. Get the heck out of here. You had no rights whatsoever. And there was no government, no Social Security, nothing like that.
That's right.
I called also about the minimum wage, you know. I donate to a homeless shelter, and they told me that is it mostly veterans that come there? They said, no, it's mostly women with kids. And they said, most of them are working, and they need help. I don't know if they're all homeless, but they need assistance. And it's just awful how these right-wingers don't believe minimum wage. I'd like to say a little more, but I'll let you talk first.
Yeah, no, I think you've said it, and good on you, Gary, for supporting a local homeless shelter, and I think you nailed it. Thanks a lot for the call. Bryant in South Haven, Mississippi. Hey, Bryant.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm fine. What's up?
I broke my back in 2004 and in a motorcycle accident and on Social Security disability, and I had a thriving business before, landscape business, lost everything, and seen the light, and been going to get food stamps. $15 a month is what I get, and finally it just cost me so much in gas going back and forth, telling the people at the food stamp place that I am still there and all this stuff, that I just got tired of doing it for $15. And I go to this church and I receive food, and they're in a Walmart building in South Haven, Mississippi, and they have never got anything from Walmart. And I pressured the lady and pressured the lady. I said, you know what, sure, it's funny. You should be able to get something off your rent here, or Walmart should start giving you food and everything. Well, when the food stamps got cut, all of a sudden, about 2 months ago, Walmart started giving them some food. And the food that we got was rotten, not very good. And you asked earlier the people, you know, why? What are we going to do about all these people that are sick and diseased? Well, they got to go to church, Tom.
Mm.
You know, they got to get saved. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now the church has its purpose, Tom. We got these Walmart churches out there, and now you can go in this church and it says do not bring weapons inside. Well, I know of 10 or 15 people that are carrying weapons in that church. You go behind the church and you see all sorts of military vehicles and everything sitting behind it. Check this out. Look at all your Walmarts that have got churches in them and look at them real closely. I call them Walmart churches.
Now, this is really interesting. Bryant, you live in South Haven, Mississippi. I lived in Atlanta, Georgia. I think I visited the Walmart I lived in Roswell and in Marietta. There was a Walmart in Marietta that I visited at least once. And there was a Walmart in Vermont that I had to go to once when I was looking for a pillow. I've never seen a church in a Walmart. Is this a Southern phenomenon?
It is, and what has happened is you got, like Memphis, you got White Flight, and this church is on State Line Road in South Haven, Mississippi.
Right.
Now, this preacher is, never mind about the preacher, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, but bottom line is that there is space inside the Walmart that they're renting out to the church for Sunday services?
No. The Walmart wanted to move to the next road south. In other words,
oh, so this is an old empty Walmart building. Walmart is their landlord.
But Walmart is their landlord, and it is so sad that you've got these people giving this food out that are
right. No, I got it, Bryant. We're out of time, but thank you for sharing that with me. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So the local Walmart, you know, kind of moved up in the world, and what they left behind was an empty building that they're running out to the church. I get it now. Welcome back. Matthew in Casanova, New York. Hey, Matthew, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Matthew? Matthew, you got to listen. Next time when you call, listen to your phone instead of the TV, because it takes about a minute for it to make its way all the way to TV. There's electrons that have to go flying around and all kinds of stuff. William in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, William, what's up?
Yes. I've been reading Tom's new book.
I'm Tom. You're talking to me, William. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Hey. I've been reading your book. And I'm 81 years old, so I've experienced some of the history that you are going through in your book.
Hmm.
But in reference to robber barons,
mm-hmm.
I think that you really ought to define them when, instead of talking about the Koch brothers or the billionaires, that you ought to start calling them out as robber barons on the air.
Mm.
It would make it more relevant to people that are reading your book to start with. And it would be more accurate in drawing a picture of who the problems really are.
Yeah, the economic royalists, I think, is the more common term that we use in the book. Yeah.
Well, you do use robber barons quite often.
Yeah, that too.
And that is a definition of the Koch brothers and the other people that you're talking about who own all of the monopolies, I would think.
Yeah, I think, you know, well said, William. Thank you very much. It's an excellent suggestion. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Gene in Vandalia, Ohio. Hey, Gene, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Am I saying your name right?
Hi, Tom. I'm getting nervouser and nervouser as I'm waiting to go on.
That's okay. Is it Gene or Jeannie?
Gene.
So what's up, Gene?
It's French. And my question is, and by the way, everything you say I agree with. I just think you do such a great job.
Thank you.
Anyway, my question is, at an organization I belong to, somebody very adamantly said, we bailed out the car industry with stimulus money and paid it back with TARP money. and we were taken both times. And I was shocked about that because I thought TARP money was stimulus money, and I can't find it on the computer. I've looked and looked and looked.
Yeah. I think the auto bailout was part of – no, TARP is the toxic asset, you know, repurchase TARP program.
Right.
So that – TARP was exclusively for the banks. The stimulus, I'm pretty sure, was just the stimulus. I think that there was a whole separate piece of legislation that was, and it turns out we didn't bail out the auto industry because they've, you know, with the Treasury Department yesterday sold the last of the stock. So basically, instead of bailing them out, what we did is we gave them a bridge loan. You know, we loaned them the money to stay alive.
Right.
And now they're back and they're doing really well. I mean, General Motors is making some really good cars. And if I had to own a car right now, I'd buy a Chevy Volt. There's just no doubt in my mind about it.
Yeah, I agree. But so the TARP money was only for the banks.
As far as I know. I mean, I might be wrong on this. I'm not in the weeds that much on these kind of things, but does it matter?
I can't find it on the computer at all.
Why does it matter, Jean?
Huh?
Why does it matter?
Well, because it's a group that we talk about and discuss these things, and
right.
I wanted to be right about it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. I can't tell you. I thought that the auto bailout, the car bailout, was a whole separate piece of legislation. It's part of TARP? Oh, Shano looked it up. It is part of TARP. Okay. Gene, my apologies. I was wrong. It was part of TARP. We will be right back. Thanks for the call. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you, and Rob in Sacramento. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I was thinking about this student loan collector thing, and those guys write off a certain amount of loans that they can't collect on, right?
I don't know. Because under the new bankruptcy bill that was passed in the middle of the Bush administration, you can no longer put student loans into bankruptcy. So they may write them off.
Yeah,
and hand them over to debt collection agencies, but arguably they can keep them on their books forever, and they can hound you forever until the day you die.
True, but it seems like it's just going to filter back to the student. If they cut their deductions by 5%, they're going to make the student pay that 5%.
In other words, the money that they're saving by cutting back on the money that they pay to student loan debt collectors is going to, you know, they're... It's money in the economy anyway. Is that your point?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They,
yeah. I think.
Shuffled.
Yeah. I think you got it, Rob. Thanks for listening to 1160 AM. By the way, Brian in Denver. Hey, Brian, what's up? Thanks for listening to AM 760.
Thank you. I also go by Jonah. I keep forgetting to tell her.
It's quite all right. What's up?
Sorry about that. I got excited when you mentioned memory and photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Because with different techniques, it can be easy to go down possibly a misconstrued road. Because, you know, photograph can seem like, photograph easier reconstruct. Well, it's creative to reconstruct walking somewhere if you do the Roman ruins.
The loci method of memory that you're talking about.
Right, but yeah. Loci might emphasize what evolutionary psychologists might want to emphasize. Mm-hmm. The place matters, and this is useful in an often-used hunter-gatherer scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But what I love is, I remember the old watchmaker, listen, it used to be science kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a little bit more of an organic clock, and the work makes a difference, because that's not... disproven with Mary Lou Henry yet, and she talks about imagining actively when she was in bed, what it was like to be her child at a certain age, and she says she flexed that muscle a lot, and she remembers her life from 12 on. It's not every day, it's every day from 12 on.
Mm. Well, this study, and I'm going to get into it in the next hour, so I don't want to drill down into it right now. But basically what the study says is that when we take pictures, we remember the picture. We don't remember the moment, and which is something that I wrote about back 15 years ago in a book called The Prophet's Way, that In fact, well, I'm going to get into it in the next hour. So, but Brian, thank you for the call. But stick around. Edward in Chicago, listening to this WCPT. Hey, Edward, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I wanted to talk about the plight of the unemployed here. You know, I predicted that Congress would go on Christmas vacation before they voted for an extension. But let me tell people how bad the unemployed have been hit already without this new keeping them waiting till after January, because their benefits will run out the end of the year.
Right.
Number one, in most states, they've lost probably a third of their benefits. You no longer can be a 99er. In Illinois, where I live, you are now a 63rder. You get 26 weeks regular, 37 weeks extended benefits. You've lost 36 weeks of your benefits.
Right. That came out of last year's budget negotiations.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, under our Democratic governor, Pat Quinney.
No, this was federal. The federal, there was the, you know, part one of the deal that they made to, stop to lift the debt ceiling or stop the government from being shut down or something like that. One of those deals that Obama had to agree to a year or so ago cut unemployment benefits from 99 weeks back to, I think, 76 weeks or 86 weeks or something like that. Is somewhere
yeah,
in
I think it was down from 99 down to 79.
Yeah. Okay.
Something like that. Whatever the case was, not only did they cut the number of weeks down, but they took away approximately 16% of your extended benefits. Your check was reduced by because of the sequester, which means if you were getting the average of 300 on your regular benefits for your extended benefits, your benefits were cut down to 250 a week.
Right. And if you listen to Rand Paul, the logic of this is that if we can squeeze people hard enough and make life miserable enough for them, they will go out and find a job. And I actually had a conservative on my program last night telling me that there's all kinds of jobs that are they can't find people to do.
Right. It's 10 people looking for every job. Right. But, Tom, the unemployed have already been hit hard enough. There was no excuse for not passing some type of extension before they went on vacation.
Yeah. No, I'm absolutely with you. Edward, Ed, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear your voice. Chris in Humphrey, Arkansas. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hi. I was prompted by your beginning statements about the Koch brothers. And the word is Malthusian.
Ah, Robert Thomas Malthus. Yes.
Indeed, sir. I was doing some thinking after I read the book of Revelations. It seems like the beast releases the four horsemen, who is, in fact, death by plague, famine, and war, which is every moralistic, type of death. To reduce the surplus population, and we get that from Charles Dickens.
Yeah, except that during Charles Dickens' time, there was only 1 billion people on the planet. There's 7 billion now.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
we hit our first billion in 1800.
Yeah, well, world population is a problem.
I agree.
I have an answer. But I can't talk about that because I'm an industrial designer.
Okay. Well, I think Malthus is right. I think it just, you know, he missed his time scales. And the major point that Malthus made was not, hey, we're running out of resources, but rather was that these things went in a sawtooth pattern, that population would rise to the point where it would strain local resources. Local resources would then become so dear that it would reduce population, basically. You know, there would be less food available, and then population would start to rise again. People would figure out, you know, a better way, and population would rise again. And I think Malthus has been rather misconstrued by a lot of people as just saying, here's some absolute limit, we're going to hit it. And that's not what he was saying. He was talking about, but in any case, this is not Malthus 101. we're talking about this insane budget bill. We got more to talk about, too. Are the police out of control? Next hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends. Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, six minutes past the hour. And we've got this very bizarre story coming out of San Antonio, Texas, where a campus police officer shot and killed a young man, a fellow by the name of Robert Cameron Redis, 23. He was pulled over at around 2:30 in the morning. Somebody nearby says that they heard this young man say to the police officer, young man was unarmed, say to the police officer, "Oh, so you're going to shoot me now, huh?" And then that was followed by six shots, apparently four of which hit this young man, and Redis was pronounced dead at the scene. Don't mess with a cop at 2:30 in the morning, I guess, is the carry home of that, or maybe something else. Mark Harold is back with us, libertarian commentator, attorney, former police officer down in Atlanta. His website is Mark Harold, M-A-R-C, Harold, H-A-R-R-O-L-D.com. And Mark, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Good to have you with us. As a former cop and as an attorney and as a libertarian, for that matter, are our police out of control?
Well, not in all cases, but in some cases they are. Traffic stops have been turned into the way to start criminal investigations instead of what they're for. Whereas you see a violation, you have probable cause, you pull somebody over and you give them a ticket. Fishing expeditions usually come from these types of traffic stops. Now, I don't know exactly what happened. I wasn't there. I would advocate using cameras on police officers, and I think it exonerates police officers as often as it would show any kind of misconduct. I think police should invite wearing the cameras. We'd know exactly what happened here. But, yeah, in this case, it does sound – one thing that drew my attention was the fact that I think he's had – said he had, you know, many, many jobs, nine jobs in the last 8 years.
Right.
Doesn't sound like the police officer that sticks around a department. Usually that means there's some kind of problem. But again, I don't know for sure. But this part here about, oh, you're going to shoot me, that I can't really put in my mind how the altercation would be going where the person would respond that way and then the shooting would occur. I'm trying to think of a fact scenario, but this looks like a very unusual situation here.
Yeah. Well, apparently this young man was belligerent. And the police officer pulled his gun, and at that point the kid said, "Oh, so you're going to shoot me?" And the cop shot him. I mean, it's at least according to this witness. But there's this larger issue, I think. I was at both the Democratic and Republican National Conventions recently. Now, I could go back to 1968. I wasn't there, but I remember when the police riot, you know, Mayor Daley's police riot happened in Chicago. Against anti-war protesters. But now it's not just, you know, cops with batons wading into the crowds. Now you've got these guys dressed like mutant ninja turtles. You've got weapons of war that are being used by machines of war being used by police departments. And up to and including now, they're buying these things that make you feel like you're being cooked. These basically giant microwaves, these things that create sound waves that you know crush people down to their knees. The pepper sprays that we've seen. I mean, it seems my sense of this, Mark, and I've been in this world in the neighborhood of six decades. My sense of it is that this country is increasingly becoming more and more like a police state, and our media is almost celebrating that in some cases.
Well, I would absolutely agree with that. You know, Radley Balco has a book called Warrior Cop, and that's pretty much what's happened. It comes a lot back to the drug war. It comes back to the fact that federal funding for law enforcement has moved completely in the areas, you know, not of psychology training, not of the different kinds of verbal judo that you can do to defuse situations. It's moved more towards the SWAT mentality. All these specialized units and police departments have followed that money. But the main thing is the drug war. It's taken cops from investigating completed crimes, trying to prevent crime by their presence or their programs. And as peacekeepers, and turn them much more into a military type organization where, you know, the force is used a lot more often than it used to be, at least statistically. And just like you said, the types of weapons, the types of things that they have, the options that they have, lethal and non-lethal force, have gone up with technology, and police have sort of followed suit. But I absolutely agree. You know, police used to be much more in the peacekeeping mode, investigatory mode. I think the drug war changed that. Mm. Money was in the hardcore policing. State and local departments followed suit, and we have very much more a SWAT culture. Just like you said, the Ninja Turtle thing, most of the officers are now wearing their vests on the outside of their uniform. I think that shows, even though it's a small thing, a mindset towards more of a military or a police state than, you know, cops as your peacekeepers.
Well, and in fact, the I forget the city in Ohio where that guy had the three young women for 10 years. It was Cleveland, Shane says.
Yeah, I think it was Cleveland.
They had stopped community policing down there. I mean, you know, that community 2 decades ago had community policing, and there literally was a cop on the beat who would, you know, walk up and down the streets and things, and or drive around. I mean, they used to walk and then they drive, and they had basically gone to just we'll respond to a 9/11 call. And had they had community policing, had there been a cop on the beat who got to know the neighborhood and got to know the people and, you know, actually interacted with them, they would have caught that guy years ago.
Yeah, I mean, community policing, and again, it goes with these block grants. It goes with the money. When the administration, mainly the Clinton administration, when community policing was the emphasis, that's what happened. They put more, you know, empowerment.
They put 100,000 cops on the streets.
Yeah, but then of course it switched, and they've gone with more of an enforcement model. Again, the drug war is the main culprit, not just mm-hmm. because they focus on drugs. It's been a mindset shift in policing. And another thing I'd say is, I don't know, this individual seems like he was a corporal in the San Antonio incident, even though he had so many jobs, I can't imagine he was that experienced with the department. One of the basic things that's happened is, there's absolutely no glamour anymore in being a beat cop. Every young rookie wants to get to make detective, task force, narcotics. They want to do something else than go out and police, you know, marked cars, police. But the main type of policing that takes place between the citizenry and the police, the most common, is that beat cop that pulls you over.
And that's the most important, I would say.
Yeah, it is, and it's the hardest. It's the most split decisions. And the least experienced officers are going to be in uniform because they haven't been promoted to detective, and they're usually going to be working midnight watch and evening watch in the middle of the night, just like this, at 2:30 in the morning, an inexperienced cop, for the most part, is going to be out there policing with the split-second decisions. The detectives, a lot of experience, they've moved on. And that actually is it's not that it's less difficult, but the split-second decisions that are being made in the street in these traffic stop situations are usually by the least experienced officers on the force.
So this is the Peter principle, the old Peter principle from the 80s, that people get promoted continuously until they hit the level of their own incompetence, you know, we're moving the competent people out or up and out, and the incompetent people are remaining. It seems to me like there's a couple of solutions here. One is to put a stake in Nixon's drug war right into its heart. Just end the drug war, number one, and say this is a medical problem, not a criminal problem, and deal with all kinds of drugs like the way that we deal with nicotine and alcohol. And secondly, to start paying our police officers really well, make it a profession, and glamorize that beat cop job. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. The 1970 Controlled Substance Act, especially putting marijuana as a Schedule I, it's absolutely been disastrous. You know, Nixon basically took, after the Warren Court, Nixon took a hard line on crime. He was sort of running against the Supreme Court. 1970 Controlled Substance Act came in. And instead of the police looking at completed crimes where they have probable cause, they've gotten into this mode because they're looking for something, usually drugs. They come up with creative ways to articulate and basically not skirt the Fourth Amendment, but stay within the outer confines of it. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, the drug war is the problem. It's a healthcare problem. Drugs are a healthcare problem.
Yeah.
I mean, they're, you know, it just shouldn't be criminalized for mere possession. I don't think using it, you know, they've made these black markets out of it. We saw the same thing with, you know, prohibition build up a lot of organized crime. With crack, we saw the gangs. And then what do we see? This extended drug war has this undercurrent black market. It's just disastrous. You can't declare war on the citizens of your own country and come out ahead.
Well, actually, one group has come out ahead, Mark, and those are the people who run the private prison business and the people who make the Ninja Turtle outfits. But that's about it.
Yeah.
Mark Harold, markharold.com, Marc Harold, Harold, com is Mark's website. Thanks a lot for being with us, Mark.
Anytime. Thank you.
Great talking with you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So how do we best end the drug war, and how do we turn police back into police rather than military SWAT teams? Welcome back. Annie, watching Free Speech TV in Shelton, Washington. Hey, Annie, thanks for watching us on Dish Network. What's up?
Oh, well, boy, I've listened to you for years, and everything you talk about is like, whoa, that, yeah, there's this and that. But what I specifically called about, I've lived for a long time in rural Washington, where there's a lot of people who are, you know, fairly low to low, you know, moderate income.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's always amazed me is how they vote. And Einstein in 1943 wrote really something that predicted what happened. And he talked about the ability of capital to rise to the top, creating an oligarchy of private capital, which then can be used to control all of the outlets for people to get news. The end.
Einstein wrote about this?
Yes, yes. And it was when he was writing on socialism, as I recall. I only have the quote in front of me. I don't have where I got it, but I've picked it up several times.
Yeah.
And he was very specific about it, and he was specifically said that people would be no longer able to gather objective information and to make intelligent use of his political rights.
Very interesting. Yeah, Einstein was a socialist. It's one of the, I mean, it's like we reinvent everybody's history, you know. It's like Martin Luther King was not anti-war and anti-imperialism and pro-labor. He was just in favor of helping black people. And yeah, they're going to do this to Nelson Mandela's memory. And, you know, just give him a year. And they certainly did it to Einstein's. And Thomas Edison, you know, he was single-handedly responsible for bringing back Thomas Paine, who had been so badly discredited because of his book on atheism, and which was called... I forget the title now. It wasn't Rights of Man, but in any case, that.
Well, and the, right now, look at the, right now the schools in Texas, and there's another state that are actually forcing that the history books and the science books deny global warming.
Yeah,
and,
or question it.
And yes, and if you have ever read Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, about Feynman, you know, the physicist, the nuclear guy.
Yeah.
He talks about how school districts, when he was on the committee for the California school districts, how they selected the books. And most of the books that were selected had not even been put in print at the point that the selectors were supposed to be reading them.
Well, how did they do that?
You know, he explains that it was years ago that I read that. They get little synopses. He read every book that was being considered, and there were certain ones that he couldn't rank because he couldn't see them. They weren't available yet.
Wow.
And yet other people were able to rank them. And so, you know, it's pretty profound. I mean, it's so pervasive.
Yeah.
At every level that it is very distressing.
It is. It is. And I'm Annie, thank you for the call, and thanks for the information on that. I'm going to have to go off in search of that Einstein quote. What you said you knew what year it was.
It was 1943 or 1944.
Okay. So right around
there. And it's in some of his writings on socialism, as I recall.
43 or 44. Okay, I got to track that down. That's good stuff. Annie, thank you very much. Thanks for watching
You're
Free
welcome.
Speech TV. And thank you very much. Thanks for calling in. We will be back in just a moment. It is coming up on 20 minutes past the hour. The music is going to start any second. Ta-da! No, I'm not psychic. I have a clock over there. And we'll be right back. Stick around. Tom Harbin here with you. The place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, not a chance. Okay, I promised you I was going to share this with you. I find absolutely amazing. Agence France-Presse published this piece yesterday. And Linda Henkel wrote it. It's in the area of memory research. And they released a study this week that showed that people who took photographs of things, they would walk around a museum, take a museum tour, and some people took pictures and some people didn't. And then after the museum tour, they would ask people, about the details of the things in the museum. The people who took pictures did not remember as well as the people who didn't. In fact, Henkel, the author of the study, said people so often whip out their camera almost mindlessly to capture a moment to the point that they are missing what is happening right in front of them. Well, I think that's part of it. And the test was done, by the way, the day after the museum. Participants were less accurate in recognizing the items they had photographed compared with those that they had only observed. She calls this the photo-taking impairment effect. I would suggest that there is something else at work here. Back in 1978, when I first met Gottfried Müller, who has now passed on, but was my mentor for many, many years, until he died 5-6 years ago. I met him in 1978, and he ran this Salem Children's Village program, international relief programs, et cetera, out of Steinach, Germany, which is where Louise and I ended up living for a year in the 80s. And we based the Children's Village in New Hampshire. We just had a board meeting this morning, in fact. HuntersSchool.org and SalemChildrensVillage.org. We based that on his model in Germany. And one of the things that he just personally did in his living space was he never had pictures of living things. And I was like, why? Now, he was a fairly religious guy. His mentor was a fellow by the name of Avram Poyak, who was a Hasidic Jew. And he and Gottfried Müller had been raised as a Lutheran Christian, and but, you know, had also been through World War II as a member of Hitler's army, and Poyak had been on the other end of Hitler's army, as it were. And the two of these guys, after the war, did this tour of churches all over Europe trying to reconcile Christians and Jews and just kind of fix stuff. But Poyak was Gottfried Müller's mentor. And he said that having pictures of living things was a violation of the first commandment. Now, this is commonly held by Muslims today. I don't know that it's so common in the Hasidic community. I have friends who are Hasidic Jews, and I've seen pictures in their homes. And really, it's more just like, you know, for theological places. But for Herr Müller, I mean, he took it very seriously. And I said, well, why would you not have pictures of living things? And he said, because it interferes with your memory of the actual living thing. I said, you know, what do you mean? And he said, think of your father. Now, my father was still alive at the time we had this conversation. He said, think of your father. I was like, okay. And he said, what did you see? He said, I'll bet you just saw a picture rather than an actual memory. And he was right. My dad and mom, when they on their, I don't know, 15th or 20th anniversary, they had an official, you know, one of these fancy portraits done, painting, not a painting, a photograph, you know, just a very pretty photograph of dad and mom that always sat on their dresser. And that was the picture that I pulled up in my head because I'd seen it 100 times. I didn't remember sitting with my dad and talking to him or something like that. That's not the first thing that came to mind. The first thing that came to mind was a picture that I had seen of my own father. And Herr Müller said, see, I told you. He said, when you take pictures, it overwhelms the brain. It's like a concentrated form of reality. And it pushes out of the mind the much weaker sequential, you know, thousands of little pictures that make up an actual motion picture memory of an event. Gets all replaced by a single picture of, oh, that's me there then. So Louise and I pretty much didn't take pictures for 15 years. And now as our kids are, you know, and our kids at that time were fairly small, and now that our kids are grown up and we don't have pretty much any pictures of our kids, I'm sort of regretting that, frankly. But that said, I thought, you know, I saw this study and I thought, well, this is fascinating, you know, that are we destroying our ability to remember things? Are we disconnecting ourselves from reality? You know, with this Facebook era where everything is a snapshot and it's on the web. And, oh, that's what that was. That's the only thing that you remember from the event, from the white water rafting or from the mountain climbing or from, you know, visiting the old friend in the city or whatever, is that single photograph. Ooh. And I also wonder if this is a variation on this. You know, Rudolf Steiner said that people, that children should not learn to read until after they're 7 years old because the brain is not ready for it. And there are studies, Dr. Leonard Schlein, neurosurgeon, now deceased, wrote about this brilliantly in a book called The Alphabet Versus the Goddess. And I knew Leonard Schlein, didn't know him well. I'd had a meal with him, and we'd spoken in a couple of venues together, had some interesting conversations. And he suggested that when you learn abstract things like alphabets before the age of seven, it causes the left hemisphere of the brain to become dominant, to become, because that's where abstract thought is processed. You know, the part that controls the right-hand side of the body. And that's the kind of, you know, masculine, linear, not connected to feelings. These are all, in some ways, cliches, and in some ways have a grain of truth to them. And that leads to hierarchy and patriarchy and war. And whoa, that's fascinating. I wrote a whole book on that. So should we change our culture?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Should we discourage picture taking, or maybe just for important events? And should we teach our kids to read after the age of seven instead of before, like they do in Sweden? Very incruentially ugly, brought to you by the organic wine company, ecowine.com. The good. The Universal Society of Hinduism. That organization is asking the Oklahoma State Capital Preservation Commission to place a statue of the Hindu monkey god Hanuman outside the Sooner State Capitol building. The move follows an attempt by the New York-based Satanist group to place a Satanist symbol, specifically an upside-down star, you know, what the Republicans have in their logo, outside Oklahoma's Capitol building. The building's grounds currently have a monument to the Ten Commandments on display, and both the Satanists and the Hindus think that if public buildings are allowed to display religious symbols, then they should display the symbols of all religions, not just Christianity. Oklahoma's conservatives naturally disagree, which just goes to show how ridiculous their point of view was to begin with. The bad. Brian Fisher. Not everyone is so happy with what's going on at the Oklahoma State House. Fisher, the president of the American Family Association, took to the airwaves Tuesday to bash the Satanists' campaign and to clear the air about which religion the First Amendment really protects. Check it out.
But the point is, by religion, the founders were thinking of Christianity. So the purpose was to protect the free exercise of the Christian faith. It wasn't about protecting anything else. They weren't providing any cover or shelter for the free exercise of Islam or even Judaism or even atheism.
Brian is just plain wrong. The founding fathers were not the Christian fundamentalists he thinks they were. Thomas Jefferson himself was extremely skeptical of all religions, especially Christianity. And what's more, there's a growing body of evidence that Thomas Jefferson's reading of the Quran, the Islamic holy book, helped him to develop his ideas of religious freedom. So, yes, the First Amendment does protect people who aren't Christian. I can't believe we're still having this debate in 2013. And the very, very ugly, Greg Hunt. The Great Barrier Reef is one of the world's true natural treasures. It can be seen from space and is known around the globe as a symbol of Australia's biological diversity. But Australia's environmental minister, Greg Hunt, doesn't seem to care. He just okayed a deal with India's Adani Group to expand an existing coal port on the coast near the Barrier Reef. The expansion will make the port, which is located at Abbott Point, will make that port one of the largest in the world. But while Hunt and the Australian government are defending the move as job creation, the World Wildlife Foundation and UNESCO say it could permanently damage the reef, which is already in pretty poor condition. appears that yet another world wonder is about to fall prey to the fossil fuel industry, and that is very, very ugly. I remember the Great Barrier Reef. Louise and I have snorkeled the Great Barrier Reef. It's an amazing thing. It's just amazing. You have to go out there in little tiny boats because it's just under the surface, and you just put on a snorkel. And I mean, you know, it's like I've gone scuba diving all over the world, but you just snorkel over it. That was a lot of years ago, though. I wonder if it's anywhere near as healthy as it was then, because then it was just this explosion of fish and eels and crabs and corals of every color, and it was just incredible. Anyhow, a lot going on, a lot that we've talked about today. We had a caller earlier who shared Einstein with us. Let me just share this with you. We dug it out during the break. This is May of 1949. It was from the Monthly Review. And it's by Albert Einstein. Yeah, that guy. The title is Why Socialism? He says, insofar as the labor contract is free, free with quotes, what the worker receives is determined not by the real value of the goods he produces, but by his minimum needs and by the capitalist's requirement for labor power in relation to the number of workers competing for jobs. It's important to understand that even in theory, the payment of the worker is not determined by the value of his product. And then he gets real serious. He says, private capital tends to become concentrated in few hands, partly because of competition among the capitalists, and partly because technological development and the increasing division of labor encourage the formation of larger units of production at the expense of smaller ones. The result of these developments is an oligarchy of private capital, the enormous power of which cannot be effectively checked even by a democratically organized political society. This is true since the members of legislative bodies are selected by political parties, largely financed or otherwise influenced by private capitalists, who, for all practical purposes, separate the electorate from the legislature. The consequence of that is that the representatives of the people do not, in fact, sufficiently protect the interests of the underprivileged sections of the population. Moreover, under existing conditions, private capitalists inevitably control, directly or indirectly, the main sources of information, the press, radio, education. It is thus extremely difficult, and indeed in most cases quite impossible, for the individual citizen to come to objective conclusions and to make intelligent use of his political rights. Because of capitalism. Albert Einstein. Maybe it is rocket science. Joe in Chicago Heights, Illinois. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hi. I was calling that on a point that kind of reflects on that and how this country has gone institutionally insane, in that we take everyday statements from government or corporations that pay their top managers hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and their top executives millions of dollars a year, that day in and day out claim they need specific tax breaks for themselves and lower taxes in general. And rationally, we should say that any company that's paying such high salaries would be nuts to ask for a tax break. Meanwhile, they've also convinced everybody that public pensions have to be cut, along with the food stamps and farm bill subsidies and so on and so forth.
There's an incredible disconnect here, and I'm astounded that more people haven't pointed it out. And I think you're dancing right around the edge of it, Joe. And that is that what conservatives are saying, what Republicans are saying, what Ronald Reagan was saying when he said, with the best of intentions, we have created a society of dependency. This with the Great Society welfare programs that he was deconstructing, he was taking apart. What they're saying is that there are two kinds of people who require two different kinds of motivation. That if you are educated and wealthy, you are motivated by being given lots of money. So you should get special tax treatment. You should get a lower income tax rate. You should get the Mitt Romney tax rate, the capital gains tax rate. You should be able to deduct things from your taxes that other people, you know, can't. Your yacht and your private plane and your, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, you should be able to, you should get more. And that will motivate you to hire more people and grow your business and, You know, so in other words, rich people need to be given riches in order to motivate them. Poor people, working class people, however, have a different reward system. And they have to be punished in order to motivate them. They have to experience pain so great that they will bother to get out of bed in the morning to go to work. And, in fact, that's a phrase that I had a conservative on my TV show day before yesterday use, a Republican strategist. He said they won't even get out of bed in the morning to go to work unless they're experiencing that level of pain and discomfort that comes from cutting all of their social programs. You know, no food, no rent, no nothing. You know, it's just they're starving. That will motivate them to work. So if they're rich, you don't try to make them hungry. You don't take away their money. You don't, you know, inflict starvation on them. If they're rich, you give them tax breaks. But if they're poor, then you inflict pain on them. Am I making sense, Joe?
Sure.
Yeah, I think this is what is being said. I think this is what, and not just poor. If you're a working class person, and it belies a type of elitism on the part of the right wing chattering class, whether it's, you know, talk radio or Fox News or the right wing thinkers, you know, of the day, that is pretty astounding. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Lawrence in Berkeley, California. Hey, Lawrence.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, Tom?
Good.
I just wanted to compare what happens in the United States when the cops pull out their guns and what happens in Denmark,
mm-hmm.
a civilized country. Do you remember a couple of years ago there was all this fuss about a cartoon and a cartoonist of Muhammad?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so the guy that drew that cartoon, the cops came and gave him a safe room in his bathroom and lined it with steel.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, a guy, a Muslim jihadi with an axe, showed up and broke into the house and tried to break into the safe room where the guy had taken cover. Well, he couldn't get in. The guy inside called the cops. And he went outside again in the streets where the cops were there to greet him. And he charged the cops with an axe.
The jihadi.
And, yeah. The jihadi charged the cops with a big axe. Mm-hmm. And what did they do? They shot him twice, once in the shoulder and once in the leg, and then they arrested him.
Yeah.
In the United States, he would have had 50 bullets in him for sure.
Oh, yeah, in a heartbeat, in a heartbeat. And I mean, think of this woman who was just speeding down Pennsylvania Avenue a couple of weeks ago here in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
you know, with her baby in the back seat. And her face was so blown away that they couldn't identify her, her body. They blown away by bullets when she got out of her car. Now, let me take it a step beyond that, Lawrence. You're talking about Denmark. There was a news story 2 weeks ago, and I think I've still got it in my pile that I never got to for the day that I was going to do it, that for the first time in the history of Iceland, a police officer had shot and killed a suspect. And the whole country's freaking out about it. Lawrence, thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, the whole country of Iceland is freaking out. First of all, I guess most of the police don't carry weapons, and the ones who do are expected to be very, very, very careful. And this was not the case. Welcome back. Janet, watching Free Speech TV in Kathleen, Georgia. Hey, Janet, what's on your mind?
Tom, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am very well.
I continue to be incensed by the Republicans and conservatives and right-wingers who are taking 2 Thessalonians 3:10 out of context, that about he who does not work shall not eat, or
right.
Stephen Fincher has said it, and Michelle Bachman and Louis Gohmert, and on and on and on. And I mean, I'm not purporting to be any sort of biblical scholar. However, I have read it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the previous chapter of the epistle, the Apostle Paul has warned about people in that neighborhood, in that area, Thessalonica, who were going around spreading gossip that the second coming was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
There was, the apocalypse is coming any minute now. I'm going to be raptured up into heaven. And not only were they going around saying that the second coming was happening, they were making judgments about who was good and who wasn't good and who was going to be raptured up into heaven. And, you know, Tom is good, but Janet's bad, so mm-hmm. she's not going to be saved, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And basically what Paul is doing is saying, you got to cut cut this out. You're going around, you're sowing these seeds of discord in the church, and you're taking advantage of the Christian obligation that people have in the church to feed people. You're choosing not to work just because you'd rather sow seeds of discord.
Mm.
And he's essentially, Paul is saying, I relieve the church of any obligation from having to take care of you because you're basically being a jerk.
So when he's saying those who don't work shall not eat, what he's basically saying is those who don't do good and genuine spiritual works shall not eat of the spirit of God,
exactly.
As it were.
Yes. This was
entirely a spiritual metaphor, not a physical metaphor. He was not talking.
Exactly.
He was not talking about lazy poor people.
No, not at all. He's warning about taking advantage of the goodness of the people who are your Christian neighbors.
And that's set up in 1 Thessalonians, or that's just earlier in the...
1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10. And as I said, in the second chapter, Paul warns about these people who are talking about the apocalypse coming.
Right.
And he says, this is not true. And he lays out in detail, this is why it's not true, because in order for Christ to come back, he says, these things have to happen in this order, and they haven't happened.
Right.
So cut this out.
Right. Wow. You know, I have to start reading the Bible again. I'm going to have to go back and look that one up. I looked it up. I wrote it down. 2 Thessalonians 3:10.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Janet, for the context. Do you teach Bible school?
Sir. No. I just went to Sunday school all my life and studied the Bible and so on, and studied it in college and so on.
Well, you should teach Sunday school. I mean, you're a great teacher.
Well, thank you so much.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the context. I appreciate the whole story. Thank you so much, Jana, and thank you for watching Free Speech TV. And it's much appreciated. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. She's not. Oh, she had to cancel. Okay. So we will have no Talk Radio News. We'll just continue with phone calls. Okay. Back with more of your calls right after this. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Donald, Los Angeles. Hey, Donald, what's up?
Oh, you talking to me?
I am. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. I didn't know somebody, this is my first time getting through. I didn't know somebody was going to, like, come on and let me know I'm next or what. Been on hold for a long time.
Yeah.
Anyway, that last thing that was just talked about, I'm going to start with that as a sort of bridge. That 2 Thessalonians 3:10. I don't believe it was metaphorical at all. But I also don't believe that it was in any sense meant to be, you know, this is true for all people at all times under all situations. Mm-hmm. And this comes back to something that I've been listening to all this stuff, and I've got so many things I'd like to say now. I wish I had a few hours, but that's obviously not going to happen. But here's the thing. Our societies have been teaching through religion for far too long that there are moral absolutes that are completely irrespective of context, that such and such a thing is good no matter what, no matter who does it, unless it's God, then it's good regardless of what he does, and such things are bad regardless of what context and who does it, again, unless it's God, then it's always good. And this has been crippling our society. And one of the things I had wanted to talk about was the separation of moral teachings from being the sole responsibility of churches, because it's one thing that we generally don't teach in school. We don't teach people in school, here's how to decide what is the moral thing to do under a particular situation, and how to tell, you know, when is doing a certain thing good and when is doing that same certain thing bad. It's usually considered to be the arena of religions to teach such things, and they're doing it wrong.
Well, they're not just doing it wrong. They're doing it. The reality is that there are probably some moral absolutes. Certainly, don't kill, don't steal, You know, I think those are reasonable moral absolutes, but don't eat shellfish.
May I touch on that?
Certainly.
Okay. Every time you shave, you're killing.
Well, you're killing what?
Every rhinestone you scrape off of your face. That's you know, that's killing something.
Well, now, you know, you yeah, well, you shall not kill another person, except in war. I mean, there's this huge exception. God constantly in the Bible is telling people to go off to war and to kill other people.
Now, here's the thing. I don't believe personally that war should be an exception, but that's my personal feeling.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't all agree on these things, and this is where society comes in, and instead of deciding, as an individual, I'm going to trust this book written by somebody thousands of years ago, it makes more sense to say, as a society, what can we agree on? What do we disagree on? For example, that particular Bible verse. Okay, so I see it a different way. Now, how exactly I see it is not really important.
Right.
What's important is there is a disagreement, and the fact that such disagreements can occur on such a so-called holy book should be indication enough that we can't simply take the way one person has interpreted it and say that is therefore absolute.
Fascinating stuff. Donald, well said. Thank you very much for the call. Armin in Braden in Florida. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Hey, if you don't cut me off, I'd like to give you my opinion.
Depends on how long your opinion goes, Armin. What's up?
Well, you never let me run long, Tom, so I don't know.
I think if I let you run long, we'd be doing a two-hour Armin show, Armin. Let's see where you go. Come on. What do you want to talk about?
Okay, I think this budget deal is more theater sham of the two-party Potomac thugs. You know, the insider stock traders that exempted themselves from trading stocks from insider information, you know,
right.
The Congress.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I've been watching this neocon Reagan trash for 30 years and this philosophy spewed. And I also agree, like you were talking about, we got to watch pictures because look how quick people become stupid watching Fox. But anyway, that's another point. Anyway, what they do is they pretend at the federal level to cut all these programs and for the poor and all this. They never get cut. What happens? We pay twice. We still pay the federal taxes, but they take and transfer all that equity and wealth more so and more so to the billionaires and to the government workers, and then at the state and local level, we get hit with higher property taxes or inflation if they run the printing press money. Either inflation eats us up, the private sector, what's left of the middle class, or taxes or property taxes because they don't throw any of these people off.
Why do you want to pick on the government workers, Armin? I don't get it. What's wrong with somebody working at NASA?
Sit there and talk about why, because it's not right, Tom. It's not right that they're making 50% more than all the people that got laid off with Reaganomics and free trade. It's not right they can retire when they're 50.
So you want a race to the bottom. You want the government workers to have it as bad as all the people in the red states.
No, what I want is small business, and I want us all sharing about the same.
So instead of complaining about government workers, why don't you complain about the big corporations who are paying their workers half of what they were three decades ago?
You asked me, let me say what I want. I don't want the billionaires. They're unnecessary. We don't need them. The rich have outlived their usefulness. They're a bunch of parasitical psychopaths. You know it, and I know it.
Well, no, I would say that's not true of all the rich.
Far and few between. I don't think we need the billionaires, and I don't think we need generations of poor people sitting on their ass on drugs, not being productive or taking responsibility.
Poor people, Armin, are less likely to use drugs than are upper middle class and rich people.
Yeah, go in the ghettos, Tom, and tell me that, Tom.
I've been there, and I can tell you, in the ghettos, what you're going to find is a lot of people who are trying to get out of the ghetto. You're going to find a lot of single mothers who are, and even entire families who are desperately working, who are you know, good Bible fearing Christians by and large or whatever, and who are trying to raise their kids well. And this stereotype of everybody in the ghettos, as it were, of everybody who lives in poverty being a drug addict, is just wrong, Armin. It's just wrong. And if you don't believe me, you go down into the ghettos and hang out with some of these folks. Chris in Chicago. Hey, we got 3 seconds. Chris, hang on. We'll talk in the next hour. We'll be right back. I didn't realize I'd run out of time there. Armin had run out of time. I guess we ran out of time together, Armin. Hey, how about that? I got cut off, too. We'll be back. Tim Carpenter. with Progressive Democrats of America, is going to be with us live and in the studio, and then we'll get back to your thoughts. I want to hear Tim's thoughts on this budget deal, too. And then we'll get back to your calls as well. Stick with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And in the studio with me is Tim Carpenter, the National Director of Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org, the guy to whom I dedicated my new book, The Crash of 2016. And you are one of my political heroes, Tim.
Well, Tom, thanks.
You're just doing spectacular work. So what's PDA up to?
We just concluded, I think we're becoming a fixture now. Thanks for having us back, first of all. We just concluded our 10th Progressive Roundtable on the Hill, where we bring together members of Congress from the Congressional Progressive Caucus with progressive activists to talk about our legislative agenda with the Paul Ryan, Patty Murray bill being released last night. We had an incredible gathering, great turnout.
This was today.
Today, I'm literally out of the cabin over here.
So what's the consensus among the members of at least the members that you had visiting you of the Progressive Caucus about this piece of legislation? It seems to me like it's not as bad as something that's worse.
Perfect. No, that's the best way to describe it. I've been coming up here with a drumbeat with you saying citizen action holding elected officials accountable. Had we not been on a constant drumbeat in regards to hands off Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, it was the consensus of all the members we've talked to. It could have been much worse.
Yeah.
So in that sense, good. The things, of course, as PDA, that we can do better, there's still $81 billion for Afghanistan. We've got to get that out of there. And I think the most unconscionable thing is the turning their back on the chronically unemployed. Hmm. Those cuts are the ones that are going to be really tough.
Well, so, is that going to be dealt with in a separate legislation?
It's hard to say. It's Congressman Jim McGovern said, if the Democrats were a majority, at least we'd have a vote before people went home. And as you know, Congressman McGovern's been leading the fight on food stamps, on the SNAP program, and shared with us where we are on that. So the good with the bad, the glass half full, citizen activism kept the cuts better, but we're still playing too much defense. So today was about how do we play more offense. Where's the Robin Hood tax? Where's the discussion on the carbon tax? So both Jim McGovern and Alan Grayson were with us. But I think just as important were the citizen activist leadership here in the Beltway. John Cabana from the Institute for Policy Studies was there to share with us a 20-year strategy on how to move the country in a progressive direction. Laura Wallach, who's been the iconic hero of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the gains we're making there, things are looking good.
Yeah, Laurie was on our TV show night before last.
So you know all that good stuff. So she was with us there as well. So it was an engaged group, standing room only. And at the same time, we were beginning to deliver our letters. Last month, PDAers were in 230 districts. Today, we committed ourselves to 270 to go to members of Congress to stop the fast track on the transfer on the TPP, to put the money back into the food stamps program. So it was a very good day for us.
That is great. You know, spin that mic back around.
I'm back.
There you go. Yeah. That is great news. And this is, we're talking with Tim Carpenter. He's the National Executive Director of Progressive Democrats of America. The website pdamerica.org, a completely independent organization, not part of, related to, in any way the Democratic Party, other than that you work with progressive Democrats to try to help the Democratic Party recover its roots.
We're the insurgency. We believe we need a second party. we get a third party. So our fight is inside the Democratic Party to get us back to our progressive roots.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that that's really, really important. So the I got the press release from Bernie on this morning. Of course, he's on the committee. You know, he's on that committee that put this thing together. And he had been apparently very, very aggressive in saying, you go near Social Security, I will blow this thing up. But they didn't. They didn't go after Social Security.
In addition to that, Bernie, in case people missed it again, another one under the radar, introduced his single-payer bill again.
Yeah, so while on Monday.
So while the corporate media is fixated with the computer glitch and how many people are enrolling, the fight for single-payer moves on. And there's Bernie Sanders once again reintroducing the legislation at the Senate level with Jim McDermott at the congressional level that will allow us as progressive activists to move forward while Washington remains stalled on the question of single-payer. These bills will help us to get the tools so that we can continue to move forward, similar to what Tommy Douglas did in Canada when he started in Saskatchewan. And Bernie, again, is there. And there's quite a buzz now on whether or not he's going to get into the presidential race now. So
right.
It's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think the first mention he made of that was on this program, actually. And he just kind of casually mentioned, so somebody called and asked him if he'd run for president. He said, you know, if that's what it takes to get the conversation going, yeah.
Well, he'll
and
certainly.
I was really surprised because he has been asked that question probably, I mean, he's been on this program every Friday for at least 8 years and maybe longer. And he's been asked that question probably 300-400 times. And I was just waiting for him to say, as usual, no, I'm quite happy being the senator from, and he was like, what? Yeah, I might think, whoa.
No, I mean, that's what we're about. We need to have our voice in this presidential election. So many people are already conceding to Hillary, and we're a long ways out from that, of course. But to have Bernie Sanders in there raising those important questions, I can't think of a better person at this point in time where we are in the political landscape. Elizabeth Warren is certainly emerging, but she's doing a lot of good stuff in the Senate right now.
She is. She is. And although, you know, if she runs, she'll have actually been in the Senate longer than Obama.
No, she'll be definitely, and more credentials as far as accomplishments, I would guess, by the time we get to 2016, if she continues on the arc that she's on.
Yeah. Why is it that in the Senate, which Democrats control, although, you know, I'll concede that Harry Reid is no progressive, why is
in
it that,
name.
Why is it that they don't just double down every time the Republicans, you know, when the Republicans say, okay, we want to cut unemployment from 99 weeks down to 80 weeks or whatever it is, Why don't the Democrats then immediately the same day introduce legislation expanding it from 100 weeks to 120 weeks or expanding the payments by 10%? Every time the Republicans say, you know, okay, we need to cut taxes by 5%, why don't the Democrats come back and say, no, we need to roll back the Reagan tax cuts?
Well, we've got to create a movement where they can find the backbone to do it, Tom. I'd love to see that. I mean, we're struggling in the House right now with the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and where were they on the fight? I mean, let's take the public option or the Obama. The Affordable Care Act. Why didn't the progressives double down and come back and say, we're going to hold our 72 votes for Medicare for all single payer? I mean, that's the fight we have. And the Senate's
well,
a long
way from
this.
Afraid that you'd see a repeat of 1974 or 72 or whatever the year was when Nixon actually proposed.
Yeah, Ted Kennedy regrets it.
Yeah, Nixon basically proposed Obamacare. I mean, in almost all the details. And Ted Kennedy fought him and said, no, it's not single payer, so ain't going to happen.
No, it's interesting. In his last year or so, he admitted that he had made a tactical mistake on that. Well, that's the question we have as progressive Democrats. Where's the backbone within our party? Right. Where is the resolve to hold the line on these fundamental questions? We're seeing some of it now in the Social Security fight, which is encouraging that we've got some real leadership. Again, part of the discussion today was Social Security Works, Alec Lawson, who's doing great grassroots work, beginning all the way back, if you remember, when we began with the fight on this almost, how long ago was it when the hearings began almost two and a half, three years ago, that constant drumbeat. So at the grassroots level, we're definitely got their backs. We're just kind of looking for that leadership in the Senate. We're hopefully this time in this cycle we can elect some more Elizabeth Warrens in the Senate that might hold the line or certainly advance some of these issues you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's time. I mean, you know, it's the time is coming. And once again, Progressive Democrats of America is causing this to happen. How?
Well, we're part of a larger social movement working inside and outside the Democratic Party. What's unique about Progressive Democrats of America is the fight inside, as we said, the insurgency, but also on the outside. We believe there's an intersection where social movements can come together to bring that energy inside the party. So in that way, we're unique. We're part of, as I say, a larger social movement. We make it happen at the grassroots level. Virtual phone calls, people getting on phone calls on specific issues, whether it be fracking last month with your help, your assistance, showing your great videos. We picked up 7 new co-sponsors on the fracking legislation. legislation that's in Congress right now. Wow. Incrementally, step by step, some of the hardest work on the inside. On the outside, keeping the heat on, resisting arrest, doing petitions, doing candlelight vigils, whatever it is. But PDA brings together those movements. So we encourage folks to visit the website, get registered online, find an issue that's important to them, and be involved. I think the biggest part is to get people off the couch and out into the streets and up here in Congress and being part of the roundtables.
And people can actually invite people into their home if they're inclined, or they can visit somebody else's home and have a meeting, right?
You guys the things we'd encourage people tomorrow night from 5 to 7 Eastern time, we're going to be doing a live stream from a great restaurant out here called Busboys and Poets. Five of the most progressive members of Congress are going to be with us to celebrate. We have things to celebrate. So bring your friends together tomorrow night and watch online. Go to pdamerica.org, watch the live stream, share it with your friends. But as you said, Tom, what's important about PDA is whether it's 2, 5, or 8 of you meeting, you can make a difference, and we hopefully can provide you some of those tools to put you in touch with people in your neighborhood who share those same beliefs.
There you go. Tim Carpenter, Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
pdamerica.org. Be sure to check it out. We'll be back. And welcome back. Andrea in Palm Springs, California, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You are on the air.
Yes, hello. I called earlier regarding Lindsey Graham's enrollment in Obamacare, and there was a banner headline on another network saying that he declined the subsidy, and it just astonished me that somebody...
How did Lindsey Graham... What am I missing here?
Right.
How is he eligible for this? He already has insurance from his employer, the United States Senate.
I don't know. That's my question. But actually, since I was on hold when you were talking about the difference of the chasm between those who want to step up to the plate and those who don't,
right.
I want to refer you to a Parade magazine article on Mitt Romney and his wife. It was an interview from August 26, 2002, and the question was, let's talk a moment about your faith. Has tithing, which is the Mormon practice of giving 10% of one's income to the church, shaped your view on how we treat each other? And Romney, I love tithing. When Mitt and I give that check, I actually cry. Mitt Romney. So do I, but for a different reason.
Hmm. Well, there's a glimpse into his black heart.
And I have saved this all this time because I was astonished this was never highlighted during the campaign.
Yeah.
The fact that he would cry over tithing to his own church.
Right, right.
And all the other things associated with his tax loopholes and, you know, Cayman accounts and everything.
Mm-hmm. I think we dodged the bullet. Mitt Romney, I think, would have been one of our most dangerous presidents. People think of him as a kind of a bumbling, incompetent guy. Bumbling, incompetent guys don't, you know, strip businesses, don't throw hundreds of thousands of people out of work and into the streets, don't accumulate $1 billion, don't. Scam the tax system. I mean, this guy is a predator. He's a predator.
Yes.
And
I just saved it, and just simply because you referenced it earlier while I was waiting, I just wanted to highlight because it is just chilling.
Yeah, that's remarkable. Andrea, thank you for the call, and thank you for sharing that with us. Tom, watching Free Speech TV in Norman, Oklahoma. You're on the air, Tom.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to... mention a couple of things here.
We just have a minute.
The Thomas Paine, you were talking about Thomas Paine earlier.
Yeah.
And the book he wrote was The Age of Reason.
Ah, yes, you're right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And
about atheism, basically.
Yeah. And also, I wanted to mention that you were talking about the Oklahoma government here. And I wanted to mention that during our last election, we went to the ballot box, and they had not allowed any third-party candidates whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And they also took away our right to put a write-in vote.
Whoa. That's not good. Tom, thank you for sharing all of the above with me. I appreciate it. Oklahoma is going to be a real interesting state to watch as we go forward. 20 minutes past the hour. It's your media support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman Program. Talk media for the sane among us. And Chris in Chicago, listen, WCPT. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I have an article, too, I was going to share with you.
Okay.
And it was about the police being out of control.
Uh-huh.
And back in 2005, the Supreme Court said that the police do not have a constitutional duty to protect someone. And that came from a domestic violence in Colorado that she had brought a lawsuit because she had a thing with her husband where he was violent and he was supposed to stay away from her. And it was really a sad case where he took the three kids and he ended up killing the three kids out and driving to the police department. And she had a lawsuit, and it went through, and then it got to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court came back and said that they don't have a constitutional right to protect somebody.
Or the constitutional duty.
Yeah. Constitutional duty.
And I would say probably the reason for that, Chris, you'll recall during the first election, President Obama said that the Constitution is a bill of negative rights. Was that the phrase he used? Basically, he was roundly attacked by the Republicans and the right for saying what he said. But essentially what he was saying is that the Constitution does not grant rights. It limits the power of government. And so basically everywhere in the Constitution, it's either constructing a government, you know, okay, here's what the judiciary does, here's what the legislative branch does, here's who can be president. It either defines and creates the government, or it limits the power and authority of the government. And clearly defines what those powers are. But nowhere does it define the duties of government other than in the preamble. And there it's in the most general of terms, you know, to promote the general welfare, that sort of thing.
Right. So, yeah. But, I mean, you have a protection, active protection against you. You'd think that because she called the cops to get her husband and bring back the kids.
Yeah, you would
think nothing about it.
You would think, and you would think that there would be a case there, and outside of the Constitution, I think that there probably is a case there, and the state laws probably there should be a case that could be litigated. But because this Supreme Court does everything based on their interpretation of what the Constitution means, heaven only knows where things go. Chris, thanks for the call. That was an interesting one. Valerie in San Diego. Hey, Valerie, what's up?
Hey, I have an interesting perspective in more than one way.
You wanted to talk about my pictures and memory conversation.
Yes. The people who take pictures, mostly they're missing more than what you think they're missing. As an artist, I take pictures of an object, you know, whatever it is, the landscape, whatever, to get the shapes. But what I notice, because I sit there and paint it too, to capture the colors, is that when I get back, the colors are not the same in the photograph. So people are not only missing the event, but they're also missing the colors.
And this is more than the difference between...
They're looking at the pictures and they're seeing something that wasn't really there, the colors color-wise either.
Right. And this is more than just the difference between ektachrome and Kodachrome, neither of which are made anymore. But
and I know when I paint that I see more than most people see too, because I'd be sitting on the beach painting and this little kid comes up to me and says, "There's no purple in the water." And I said, "Come here, stand next to me. Now look from my point of view." And he looked out there and he went, "Oh,
wow!"
And he could see it.
Yeah.
So that's part of what I do when I'm painting is I bring people's attention and awareness that they're not seeing. People miss so many things. People walk by the beach, and there's dolphins all over out there, and nobody's seeing them until I point them out.
Amazing. Amazing.
People are missing so much in life.
Yeah, I think so. I think all of us need to slow down, take a deep breath, take a look, carefully listen, feel the world around us, smell and taste it, be present with it more often, and bring ourselves to the moment, to this very moment, And when you do that, you discover that that moment, every moment is sacred, you know, and that sacralization of the moment by coming into the moment is such a useful thing. Valerie, thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing your story with us. That was just marvelous. Steve in Crane Hill, Alabama. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Just fine. You wanted to bring up the shooting down in Texas?
Well, I was wanting to comment on Mr. Mark Harrell. He hit the nail on the head, and there is a lot of this going on across the U.S., and it's not being reported. Mm-hmm. Cops are shooting innocent people and their dogs. They're going to the wrong house. They're kicking the door in without a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
They're just too quick to pull the gun. I'm 63 years old, sir, and I've never called in on anything, but... this is not the America I was brought up in. When I was brought up, like Mr. Harrell said, cops used to protect and serve. They used to patrol. Now they're militarized, and it's got out of hand. Before, they're as a prerequisite to being accepted as a patrolman or a policeman, they should have full psychiatric evaluations. They should have random drug testing in every law enforcement across the U.S. and at least 2 years. College in law.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with any of that, and they should be well paid. They should be well paid enough that there's competition among really high quality people for those jobs.
I agree with that as well, Tom.
Yeah.
They do have called a code of color or a blue wall.
Mm-hmm.
You have good police officers and law enforcement officers out there. Unfortunately, there are bad ones, but when the good ones see what the bad ones do and stick up for them and lie for them, that's a conspiracy, and that makes them just as bad.
Have you been a police officer, Steve? Are you speaking from personal experience, or is this observation?
6 years Army and 27-year mailman.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, so you've seen the world. You've absolutely seen the world. And, you know, it's funny, when Louise had her breast cancer surgery a year ago and I had prostate cancer surgery, we spent about a month in bed watching old TV shows, and we were watching these old McMillan and Wife shows, you know, on Netflix. And, you know, here's the police commissioner running around chasing the bad guys in the 70s, right? This was like, let's revisit the 70s, those and Columbo and some of those other shows. They never pulled their guns. I mean, you know, they never pulled their guns. And now it's like, that's the first thing that happens. Steve, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. It is 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You want to read something that'll really boggle your mind? Look for Why Socialism by Albert Einstein. What? Fire? What? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of, outside the Capitol, there's a whole bunch of, I don't know if it's fire trucks or police cars. Yeah, it's fire trucks. It may be an accident. Let's hope nobody was injured. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're just looking out the window, as it were. And an amazing story over Democratic Underground. It's a clip from Salon, actually. Salon.com. And it's about this guy, Eddie Lampert, who is now widely considered the worst CEO in America. He destroyed Sears. And he did it. He was a hedge fund manager, too. He did it. His hedge fund is down 40%. The business press has been turned from praising his genius to, you know, they're calling him Crazy Eddie, actually. And the author says that's what happens when Ayn Rand is the basis for your business plan. Apparently what this guy did was, using quotes from Ayn Rand's novels, he pitted the Sears managers against each other in like a Lord of the Flies kind of death match, thinking that that would, you know, thinking that because people will optimize their behavior towards selfishness, that would produce that would cause them to act rationally and boost performance. And instead, the company went down the tubes. So, pretty amazing stuff. Tom in Holyoke, Colorado. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Hey, it's good to talk to you. On this issue of Christ being a capitalist or whatever, if I remember right, when Passover started on the weekend, that Christ was crucified, the first thing that got him in trouble was he went into the temple and the money changers were taking things that were worth more and giving less to the person. And then they had to buy a sacrifice, a dove or something, and they were marked up quite a bit. And he flipped the tables over and said, you're turning my father's house into a den of thieves. Are you money changers? That right. would be the banksters, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And then flipped the tables over and said, quit making my father's house a den of thieves. That would also be the banksters.
It's amazing how selective we can be. And, you know, I think the New Testament is a very socialist document. I think the Old Testament is more of a tribalist document. And I think, and I say that in a very positive sense. I think the whole idea of Jubilee and you know, respecting the fields and rebooting wealth and all those things. In any case, you can, there's enough in both that you can pull out pretty much anything you want. But yeah, that's a good story, Tom. That's a good story that we should remind ourselves of more frequently. Walter in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, Walter, what's up?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. You want to talk about food stamps?
I haven't been able to hear you. It's nice to talk to you again, Tom. I wanted to tell you one thing and ask you one thing.
Okay.
What I wanted to tell you was the congressman that was on yesterday said that food stamps have been reduced, and I want to take exception to that. They haven't been reduced. They've been eviscerated. They don't exist anymore. I was getting $110 in food stamps as short a time ago as October to supplement my SSI income of only $710 a month. That's what we're supposed to live on. And then it was dropped to $90 in November, and then it was dropped to $25 in December. And yesterday I got a letter, and my food stamps just got dropped to $19 a month.
Wow.
As if $19 in food stamps and $710 in disability income is going to allow me to live.
That's terrible.
That's terrible.
That's
amazing. That's what I wanted to say. And, okay, that's enough on that. What I wanted to ask, for the fourth or fifth time, I've heard you rattling off numbers statewide having to do with points, but I have never heard you explain what that's about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You just finished talking about how the southwestern states had higher points than whoever.
Oh, in the newscast. Those are from Radcast. Yeah, okay, that's... you say, you know, they're having 35 counts per minute going, you know, peaking to 70. That's those are radiation counts. Radcast.org does radiation counts all across the United States, and they're monitoring basically the Fukushima radiation as it's traveling across the United States. And
okay.
And so that's, and anything over 100 counts per minute is considered, oh, look out. That's an alert. And, you know, we've got some communities where it's peaking, you know, it's averaging around 30 or 40, and it's peaking at 50 or 70 or at 90. There was one a couple of days ago. So that's what that is. That's the radiation. So,
okay
Walter.
That.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call, Walter, and thanks for listening to KABQ. Jordan in Albuquerque, also listening on KABQ. Hey, Jordan, what's up?
Hi. I wanted to piggyback on a comment or that some of your previous callers were making. It really had to do about some of the inequalities or problems with the police.
Mm-hmm.
Albuquerque has a major issue with its police force.
Mm-hmm.
For the last several years, we've actually had a police or a federal probe trying to protect us because of the, I want to call it murder rate for or unjustified shooting from police officers with whoever they happen to encounter. They tried to implement a lapel program where all police officers had to wear a recording lapel.
Mm-hmm.
And for about 6 months, it started to decrease, but it was really spiked again in the last about 6 months. I mean, we had 3 people shot within the last week.
By police.
By police, correct.
Wow.
And I mean, even if you look, I'm pretty sure per capita, we're number one or number two for people who get shot or murdered by police within the nation. And we only have 550,000, 600,000 people out here.
Yeah, and New Mexico has some of the worst poverty in the country, too.
Exactly. And police out here get a $5,000 to $10,000 incentive for joining the force. So you can't tell me they're out there to go ahead and look out and protect and serve. If you're getting a financial incentive that large to join a force, you're probably going to be looking for other incentives that you can financially with the job. And if these people, another huge problem out here, if they shoot somebody, they get paid leave for 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand how this protects or serves our community in any way possible.
Yeah. The nature of the work of being a police officer is that occasionally you may have to shoot somebody, and I don't think somebody should be punished for that until you've determined whether or not they did it inappropriately. So I don't have a problem with the paid leave while there's an investigation going on. As long as if it's determined that this was inappropriate, there is some sort of actual prosecution and, you know, more than just a dismissal. I think that one of the problems that we have is that in many of our communities, police are not held to a standard of behavior that's reasonable. There's not a way for citizens to hold police accountable. But, you know, on the other hand, there's some very, very good people out there in the police forces, and we have to acknowledge that as well. Jordan, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to KABQ. Charlotte in Fresno, California. Hey, Charlotte, what's up?
Hi. I wanted to ask about your first name, how you pronounce it correctly, and why is it spelled so uniquely?
When I was 13 or 14, my name is Thomas. It's the name my parents gave me. And when I was 13 or 14, I was really into Thomas Edison and Thomas Jefferson, and they, on various occasions, would spell their name T-H-O-S or T-H-O-M. And there was also a shoe store called Tom McCann, and it was spelled T-H-O-M. It was a fairly common spelling in the 19th century and in the early 18th century and in the late 19th century. And it's now come back. I've noticed that there's a guy who writes for the Washington Post who spells his name T-H-O-M. There's a couple of others. It's startling to me. But that was just, you know, when I was 12, 13, something like that, I went through this kind of Bob Dylan phase where I was writing poetry and I wanted to be different or weird or something. And so I just changed how I spelled my name.
Oh, I see. Also, when is Stephanie Miller coming on your station?
Stephanie Miller, if you're talking about Free Speech TV, Stephanie Miller's working on it right now. I don't know. I think it's going to be in the next month or so, but you'd have to ask their folks. But, you know, keep up the questions, and hopefully she'll be here soon. Charlotte, thanks for the call. Eric in Claryville, New York. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
Hey, what's up? You are on the air, sir.
Hi, I just got cut off.
Okay.
I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, I hear you just fine. Am I faint? Apparently not. Maybe apparently Eric can't hear me, so I'm gonna move on. John in Smiths Creek, Michigan. Hey, John, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm gonna hear you real well.
Great. Okay, we have 1 minute to the break, John. It's all yours.
Oh, I wish I had more time. I went last night to the screening of the documentary from Dr. Reich.
Yeah, Inequality for All. Yeah, it's brilliant,
fantastic.
Isn't it?
Fantastic. Oh, it's got to be mandatory for everybody to see it in the country. It is. I mean, these guys at the top are sitting up there laughing at us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we've been living a lie for 30 years. I mean, people have to wake up. It's just unbelievable.
And they're still getting away with it. And they've still got people who are reciting these things. And, you know, on talk radio and on television. It's just, it's amazing.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
But,
and I'm a retired UAW GM employee.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how the unions, you know, at one time we had some strength. And everything just went down together.
Yeah. And Robert Reich documents that absolutely brilliantly in Inequality for All. I agree with you. It should be school curriculum in every school in America. It is a brilliant movie. It's absolutely brilliant. If you haven't seen, thank you for the call, Jeff. If you haven't seen Robert Reich's new book or new movie, Inequality for All, it's really worth, though, $6 or $8 or whatever it is to go see it. Do it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And right at this moment, it's in theaters all across the country. So it's really worth the effort. Welcome back. Daryl in Rexville, New York. Hey, Daryl. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Just fine, thank you. What's on your mind?
Hey, you brought up this. I heard a couple of people talking earlier about Scripture and Thessalonians and about people not eating and not working and et cetera.
And I happened to catch the program that you had on the other night on your big picture with the guy, the guest you had on, that was pretty blatant about let them starve, let them whatever. It was going to be motivating them.
Right, right. He wouldn't say that about rich people, though. You know, it's like what motivates them is another tax cut.
And so I just really wanted to say that this whole thing with using God as a to hide behind God's skirt in order to justify your actions is pretty pathetic.
Yeah.
And I'm a Bible scholar, and I've got several degrees and et cetera, et cetera. And I just wanted to say that Scripture is meant to be taken as a whole. There's three sides to every coin.
Hmm.
And you can't take one piece out of context with something else, because then all you have is contradictions. And you have to look at the whole, it's kind of like the layers of an onion, and you have to look at everything in order to understand the greater good.
Yeah.
And if you take it back to Psalms 41, it says that you're blessed if you just consider the poor. And I think as a nation, we've completely lost that. As when you want to say our higher calling is supposed to be America, is supposed to be the light on the hill, so that other people can look up to it and say there is still hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've lost that as a bigger picture, and it's because there's a book I read a while back, and I'm friends with a lot of librarians, and they shove a lot of books my way for my research, and it was something about what's the matter with Kansas. I don't know if you're familiar with
it. Yeah, Thomas Frank wrote it. He was one of our Conversations of the Great Minds interviews. He's been on this show a number of times.
Beautiful.
He lives down the road, in fact.
These people voted themselves out of their own over an issue on homosexuality and on abortion, and they destroyed their own state and destroyed their own lives just because someone used that as a pawn.
That's right. That's right. They used religion as a wedge, basically.
Yes, exactly. And this is only growing and growing. And I think that we have to stand up to this and to shout down this evil that has creeped on our whole conscience here in our land, and because it's destroying everything that our fathers and our grandfathers all worked to build.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you, Daryl. Very well said. Thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing that. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Eric in Claryville, New York, you're on the air. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for your great and incisive work. I'm one of those million people whose federal unemployment benefits expire on December 31st.
Oh, my.
I just happened to be right at the end of my first initial 26-week period. And I have gathered that the Democrats have attached the issue to another measure. Do you have any anything that you could tell me that might clarify the possibility that this will actually be taken up? And
I don't. When I went on the air 3 hours ago, there was nothing. And in the 3 hours intervening, I frankly haven't had the time to, scan all the news sites, although, we all kind of keep an eye out for what's going on. To the best of my knowledge, nothing solid has happened. There's a lot of speculation. But to the best of my mind, nothing solid has happened. But we need to be, everybody in the country, Eric, should be calling, everybody who's watching right now should be calling their elected representatives. You've got two senators and you've got one member of the House of Representatives. And if you're not sure who they are, go to callcongress.org. There's a phone number there for the White House switchboard, for the congressional switchboard. They will connect you. Just give them your zip code and call all three of them and tell them, help the unemployed. Thank you, Eric. Minutes before the hour, Tom Harmon here with you and Natalie in Des Plaines, Illinois. Hey, Natalie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you? Big fan.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to WCPT.
No problem. But I wanted to comment on the police brutality issue. And I remember one day picking up the Chicago Tribune. I don't know what it is in other states, but I know in Illinois one day, they voted that the college-educated requirement to become a police officer was no longer. All you needed was a high school degree. Now, this is happening at the time when a bunch of Marines were coming home, and when you can't find a job, what job are you going to get where you're used to working with guns and you don't have a college degree?
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a huge rise in, at least from what I've been noticing, a huge rise in a lot of Marines saying, well, I'll be a police officer.
Sure.
And then if you have people not even looking at their PTSD, I'm a daughter of psychologists. I mean, these cases of all of a sudden them shooting or overreacting seem pretty, like, I saw it happening when I, like, read that article. I was like, this is just going to cause more people overreacting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's and that's a delicate line to walk, I'll tell you, as both as a talk show host and just as an American, is on the one hand, we have to acknowledge that hundreds of thousands of Americans, many, most of them young people, are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan from George Bush's two illegal wars, not just physically disfigured, but emotionally and psychologically damaged in ways that can be dangerous to society. And on the other hand, we don't want people to discriminate against veterans, because there's a lot of vets who are coming back who are just fine, thank you very much, or even with their PTSD, they be the world's best employee. And, you know, and they're just working through the stuff. You know, these are the people, you know, who came back from World War II. It's my dad's generation. They came back from a horrible war, too, and were able to make something of themselves and make the world a better place. So it's a fine line to walk, but we do have to acknowledge that. Natalie, thank you for that observation. It's a good one. Marcia in Chicago. Hey, Marcia, what's up?
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Marcia?
I'm fine, and I really enjoy your program.
Thank
so much
you.
Information. Listen, I really wanted to touch base on the one gentleman that called was talking about his food stamps being lowered to $19.
Per month, yeah.
And I just think that's really an awful shame. You know, I read in Huffington Post some weeks back that Congress spent, I don't know how true it is, they spent $300 a month just on their coffee, not including meats and vegetables and things like that.
Per member, you mean?
Beg your pardon?
Each member spends that?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I read in Huffington Post, and
yeah,
I didn't check it out.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Beg your pardon?
That wouldn't surprise me. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, what nerve to call people lazy when you take 249 days out of 365 days.
Right.
I mean, the people need to form. We need to march on them. We
mm-hmm.
need to let them know that, you know, we know what you're doing.
Yeah.
We know you're the ones that are lazy.
Go
we
to
Pete. These are our tax dollars.
I'm with you. Go to pdamerica.org or any, I mean, you know, pick your organization. There's a lot of great ones out there, but there's some of these grassroots organizations where you can literally start a chapter in your kitchen or in your living room. And, or, you know, if you got a friend who is more socially inclined and likes people in their living room and, or the local school, you know, will loan you a classroom or something and get active. I mean, it's entirely possible. So, I think you're right. And Marcia, thank you. Thank you for the call and thank you for the observation. Rich in Chicago. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Oh, wow. I finally talked to Tom Hartman. Thanks for having me on the
Thanks
show
for calling.
Here. I got two things that are just floating in my mind. I don't know how to really ask them, but I really just want to pick your brain about. Have you ever heard about the thorium reactors?
Yes, I have. We've had a couple of people call in and tell us that they're going to save the world and that they don't produce radioactive waste and that they're wonderful, wonderful things. I read a Scientific American article which sort of said the same thing. I've read a few other things that suggest that getting to thorium is that frankly we'd be better off using solar and wind. I don't know how to say it beyond that. But
okay,
yeah.
All right. I'm not cutting you off. I don't want to cut you short, but maybe check out thorium even on like YouTube. I watched a documentary the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an hour long. There's this guy. He's been involved with like NASA and stuff. But anyway, he.
No, I know. But he, you know, sometimes, Rich, if something is too good to be true, it's
yeah.
not true. If thorium reactors were so successful, if they were the answer to all our problems, why don't we have any?
Yeah, but this
somebody can make some money with this thing.
Kind of shows this whole. Like, if you want to call it a conspiracy, like, he lets everybody know, like, the guy that started the whole nuclear thing, the Wigner guy, you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
He's like a nuclear scientist that...
You're talking about back in the 40s? Who?
Yeah, yeah. Like, he started all the technology that would have nuclear power...
Well, this stuff all goes back to Edward Teller's bomb project, and then Teller and a bunch of his buddies. There's a book or a screenplay about this called The Firecracker Boys. You know, they decided to try to bring, Adams for Peace was the phrase. I think they were just trying to, assuage their guilty consciences over vaporizing a couple hundred thousand people in Japan.
This is where this guy got cut off at with the government.
Yeah.
And I don't know, just check that out for me. But another thing is I never hear anything about on the radio these people that talk about the straw man and, like, incorporating your name and getting money back from the government. And every day I
hear... Yeah, I got to tell you, it's a scam, Rich. That whole thing of, if you're incorporated, if your name is in all caps, that it's a, it's a scam. It's a fantasy. Thanks for the call, but, don't go down that rabbit hole. It's not a good place. Coming up tomorrow, attorney Mike Papantonio, host of Ring of Fire Radio, is going to be weighing in on the issues of the day. That and all the other news the corporate media generally won't talk about right here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It begins with you. Get out there, get active, occupy something. Get over to pdamerica.org. Sign up. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.